I'm Jamie Seeker, and this is What It Takes. Each episode, I sit down with real business owners to talk about their journey, the wins, the challenges, and everything in between. Let's dive in. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to What It Takes. It's the podcast where we dig into the real stories behind business owners, the wins, the challenges, and everything in between. I'm your host, Jamie Seeker, and today's guest is someone who has literally built his dream from the ground up, and I'm talking about Scott Rodwin, the award-winning architect, builder, and sustainability leader in Boulder, Colorado. He's the founder of Rodwin Architecture and Sky Castle Construction, a 30-person design and build firm that's been leading the charge in green building since 1999. Scott's not only designed and built stunning, high-performance homes and commercial spaces, he's also played a big role in shaping public policy around sustainable development. He's the current president of AIA Colorado, a past president of the Colorado Green Build Guild, and has taught sustainable design for over 25 years. But behind all of that is a story of grit, vision, and the courage to build something different. And I'm really excited to hear what that journey has really looked like for him. So let's get into it. Welcome, Scott.
Hi, Jamie. Thank you.
So Scott, take us back to the beginning. What sparked your journey into architecture and green design?
Back in 1999, I was working for somebody else, and the job did not go well. And in a fit of passion, I quit that job and started my own. It is not a great way to start a business because I didn't have a plan. It was totally spontaneous and accidental. And I didn't have any work, I didn't have any leads, and I had no infrastructure. That said, I had a community, and that's what saved me. My next-door neighbor became my first client just a couple of days later, when she turned to me and said, "Hey, I'm building a cabin. Could you give me a few hours of consulting?" And I said, "Sure." And I took a look at what she had in mind, which was a sketch on grid paper that was absolutely awful. And within an hour, she was like, "Okay, I need to hire you to redesign this for me." So I had my first job right out of the gate. And then I had a friend who was part of the Japanese American community here in Boulder, because she's Japanese. And she said, "Hey, I know this sushi restaurant owner who wants to build a new restaurant." And so a couple of weeks later, we got a gig designing a restaurant. Those two projects were our only projects for the first year and a half. We threw everything we had into it, and both of them became major award-winning projects, one nationally, one at the state level. And because we gave them everything, we were able to leverage those fairly small projects into something that was the best possible outcome for both of them. And those enabled us to suddenly have a portfolio that we were able to use to gather other future projects.
So as you're describing that journey, you're referring to it as we. So you're both an architect and a builder. Is Correct. That what you're kind of referring to?
Sort of. I refer to everything as we because the Ayn Rand myth of Atlas Shrugged and the Fountainhead is a myth. In architecture and construction, everything is done as a team. I am not that smart. We have people who know construction better, engineering better, drafting better, interior design better, and it does take everybody being involved and also working with the client. I often refer to clients as my dance partners because that is what the relationship is. We want to be able to communicate back and forth with each other in that flow. And it really tends to yield a good relationship when we think about it that way.
I think it's a good perspective to have.
Yeah, rather than us serving them or them being our boss or what some people think of, which is the architect being this ego-driven person who's going to bring their high design down to the client. So it's really very much an equal partnership. But the
I think that gives it.
Yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
I was referring to is actually more that it was a community. I got my first jobs from my neighbor and from my friend. It wasn't that I had an ad out there or SEO on a website. Matter of fact, this was just when websites were getting started. So this was all about social interactions and community. And that's one of the tips that I give to anybody who's looking to start a business, which is make sure that your social network is vibrant, because that's where you're going to be getting your first jobs.
Yeah, that's a huge takeaway. And I think that perspective is a really good and healthy one to have, not just when starting up, but also when building a team. But let's talk about why you chose the design build model. I think I'm getting that by how you're talking about your team, but how has that really shaped your business?
Architects have been told for about 100 years by the American Institute of Architects and by everybody else and by lawyers in particular, don't do anything outside of your lane, because if you do, you're opening yourself up to liability, whether we're talking about engineering or building or interior design or landscape design. They say, just stay to this narrow thing. What we found is that the more narrow we were focused, the more things were out of our control. And when that happens, you open yourself up for liability. So I did an experiment and said, what happens if we start actually taking responsibility for more aspects of the things that we're going to be sued for anyway? Oh, actually, something really important. 25 years of being in business, we have never been sued, either on the architecture or construction side. I know of no other architecture or construction firm that does as much work for as long as we have that has not been sued.
Yeah, that's a great accomplishment.
And I attribute that specifically to the fact that we said, we will take responsibility for as much as possible, which is the opposite of the conventional thinking, which is push everything off to other people and keep and stay just in your lane where you are an expert. What we found is that when projects happen, because occasionally we design stuff where we're not the builder, not the engineer, not the architect, not the interior designer. And what we found is that when we are not in charge of those other areas, other people are going to make mistakes. We're going to make mistakes, but we don't have as much ability to correct those mistakes before the client discovers them. So if we're the architect and the builder and there is a flaw in the electrical system, we're going to find it first, and we will then call up our electrician, we will get them out on site, and we will fix it and make it right. And because of that, we don't get into trouble with the client, because the most common place that lawsuits occur is the builder says to the client, oh, your architect screwed up. Or the architect says to the client, your builder screwed up, and they point their finger. And that's true of every individual discipline. So our contracts are really unusual. We provide one contract and we take care of everything. There's nothing that's outside of it. And because of that, we're responsible for everything. Our clients love the idea of single point responsibility, because in the design build world or the construction world, every client has heard about horror stories where their friend had had somebody build something for them and it went terribly wrong, and it cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars and lawsuits and a lot of stress. So when we say we provide single point responsibility, they look at us a little like, are you sure? And we say, really? Fully. And what that means is that, yeah, we occasionally have to suck up a $10,000 loss because somebody installed a door wrong, but it's a lot less expensive than a $100,000 lawsuit over it. And to be perfectly honest, we get a lot of work and we have grown enormously quickly, in large part because of that sales point of we take full responsibility for everything, because in our industry, that's unusual.
Yeah, and I bet it's really efficient too. I mean, even from a cost perspective from the client. But, and it's easy to look back now and say, oh yeah, this is working, right? Mm-hmm. After 25 years, we've got, but what was one of the first big wins that made you feel like, hey, this is real, we've got something here, this is really working?
Well, one of the biggest wins is we've realized, and this is important for all business owners starting out, is to, instead of working in the business all the time, just, you know, drawing the things and getting the paper out the door, to step back and actually work on the business. One of the things that we figured out really early is that builders make a lot more money than architects for doing the same project. And we realized that the model, architects have this long story that, oh, woe is us as a profession, we don't make much money. And it's true compared to doctors or lawyers or other professions with as much educational experience and as much liability, we don't. But builders do. And we looked at the synergies between those two companies. That builder's problem is that they're always out there scrambling to try and get projects from architects. And they have to compete as a commodity, meaning on the basis of cost. So instead of being able to represent their quality and the success of their process and the end product, they have to say, well, this guy over here is doing it for a cost plus 10%. We're going to do it for cost plus 9%. And it's a race to the bottom. The way that we do it, by the time our clients have really experienced what it's like to work with us as an architect, they understand the value and benefit of having a team that they trust. And they've gotten a chance to audition us so that when we say, all right, now let's pivot to the construction side, they're not dealing with an unknown entity, because now they're dealing with big dollars. When they're just dealing with the architects, a little like dating, working with a builder is more like being married, a lot more liability, a lot more money, a lot longer period of time. So they love having the ability to audition and check us out before they sign us for the big dollars on the construction side. But them knowing that they have a team that they can trust, where they've already tested out how do they work as a company, they're willing to actually pay a little bit extra in order to have that level of assurance and knowing that their team is one team that is all working for their benefit, rather than having two independent companies that are always looking to pass liability onto the other one.
Yeah, absolutely. But I bet there's a flip side to that too. It hasn't probably all been, you know, rainbows and unicorns.
Sunshine.
What's one of the toughest challenges that you've faced in building a firm that has that type of structure and synergy and, you know, just the way that you've designed that?
Harder. It's two completely different disciplines. It's a little bit like if a doctor said, we're going to be a pharmacist as well. Even though they're related and they work together all the time, those are two completely different disciplines. Same thing with architecture and construction. And there are synergies and there are benefits because the two businesses feed each other. And there are also efficiencies in that we're working with a team that knows how to work with each other rather than always working with different builders that we're not familiar with or different architects that we're not used to. The two teams can also inform each other. The builders can tell the architect ahead of time, these are the details and materials and the way that we want to build. And the architect can work with the builder later during the construction phase, helping them to make sure that they're maintaining the original design intent. The downsides have been it took longer to build the machine. I refer to businesses as machines.
Yeah.
And rather than a couple of years to build an architecture firm, we also had to spend a couple of years building a construction firm. And we're constantly improving both of those firms simultaneously. So the most important thing that I realized early in the process is that I really don't have the knowledge, the expertise, or the bandwidth to run both firms at the same time. So one of the first things I did is I hired somebody with 40 years of experience. I got this old guy, we call him John Wayne, because he had no sense of humor whatsoever. He was older than dirt and serious as could be, but his level of knowledge and quality was just impeccable. And he was no fun to be around, but he got the job done incredibly well. And he then trained the construction side. So we had somebody with a wealth of experience. And then I also got very lucky. You asked what are some of the challenges we've had. When I started in 99, as I said, we got some little projects we started, we had some momentum. But in the construction world, one of our unique challenges is roughly every 7 years, plus or minus, we have a recession. And no matter how good you are, no matter how good your website is, no matter how competitive your pricing is, doesn't matter. When there's a recession, nobody has work. And the recession of 2007-08 hit, and we lost 90% of our work in 6 months.
Yeah.
And we tried to figure out, how can we survive this? One of the things we did is we got scrappy. We took absolutely everything that we could. Bathroom remodels, doesn't matter. We took that project. But the other thing is we said, we have to make more out of each project that we do have. And at the time, we were barely doing just a little bit of construction. It wasn't a fully professional team or process. And I turned to one of my young designers who had been a builder before he went to architecture school. And I said, Brandon, how would you like to help me to take our fledgling design build firm and make it into a really robust going concern? And he said, that has been my dream. I've always wanted to do design build. And his area of expertise was there. He had the skill, he had the ambition, the drive, and the willingness to build a company. So he then became graduate partner and the president of the Sky Castle side. And having that, we call it peanut butter and jelly, where he's very different. And we have complementary skills. The most important thing when looking for a partner is not finding somebody like you, is finding somebody who complements your weak areas and who most importantly that you have good chemistry and trust with. And that has been our secret sauce, that we have a fundamental respect for what the other person does, even though it's not the same as what we do. So he is now largely running the Skycastle side, and we have offices right next to each other. And we go back and forth 20 times a day, because that fluidity between what he's doing and what I'm doing makes it cohesive and operate as one efficient firm.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think what you're saying about the relationships, I think we tend to look for people like us because we like to get along with them. We're working with them. You know, we're with our work family more than our, you know, personal families some of the time. And it's hard to choose somebody that you're just fundamentally different from. So I think that that's something that is, I've seen a lot of success with businesses and partners who've been able to identify that in each other and work well with that. So that's really great. I want to talk about community too, because that's something that you mentioned in the very beginning is what kind of got you started. And the way that you're talking about your partnership and your team and how you surround yourself with people, it sounds like you and I share a lot of the same philosophy in getting to be around people who have shared vision, but, you know, really are very different people. And you talked about that with your partner, your current partner, with, you know, first getting started and finding a wealth of knowledge, you know, and helping to train. But how has that kind of point of view, like teaching, advocacy, civil involvement that you have, how has that influenced your growth and your impact?
Sure. And there's a positive and negative side to it. The positive side is it's been incredibly personally rewarding just to know that we're giving back, because a lot of the service and leadership that we do doesn't have a direct material reward. We don't get paid for this. We don't even necessarily get kudos for it outside of the very small realm of the fellow architects or builders that we're helping to lead the organization for. But what we do is we use those organizations to help create an environment that forwards the mission of our company. Our company was founded on the idea of sustainable design before that had a name. Green Building didn't have a name. Green Building Codes didn't exist. And we started doing it. We started straw bale construction on our very first project. It was the greenest little gem of a building that we had ever seen. And it wound up resonating, that people said, wow, this is really cool. And it won all kinds of national awards. And it was this tiny little project that was punching way above its weight. So we had a passion. I had a value that was important to me. And I made that fundamental to the firm. And we pursued it at the highest level that we were able to execute it at. And because of that, it was then recognized for having something extraordinary about it and showing actual leadership. Because of that, it created a reputation, both within our community and in a larger sense, that then became our accidental marketing, meaning that I didn't go out and say, we're going to check this box of, we're going to call ourselves Green Builder. We simply started doing it because it was important to us. And that then set us in a position of leadership within the community. So many years ago, I was the president of the Colorado Green Building Guild, and that's an organization of several hundred people that all are working towards green building and sharing knowledge. And that's one of the most important things to me, is that whether we're working in the green building side or the architecture side, that there are a lot of folks that just think that, well, we're all competing with each other, so we should keep our secrets, keep our secret sauce of how we work. And frankly, that scarcity mentality and that fear and that, honestly, selfishness just doesn't resonate for me as a value. So in giving service to the community and rewarding it also among my staff, I encourage them and support them in doing community service as well. We are looking to distribute what we know to the broader community. And in doing so, it creates a culture of other people sharing back with each other. We've learned so much from our competitors. Just a couple months ago, one of our competitors said, hey, you want to go have lunch together? And we said, sure. We went out and we had lunch together. And he started telling us all about his profit and overhead and how he does work and things like that. And it was like, wow, you are just laying everything bare and we are your direct competitor. And I asked him at the end, I said, just curious why you're doing this. And he said, I've been watching you do this for years. And he said, this is what you do. And we learned so much from you. We're just looking to give a little something back. And I was like, that is wonderful. It doesn't happen every day, but it was so direct. Usually it's more diffuse that people wind up teaching workshops and seminars, and the information permeates the community. And we all the boats get lifted up because we all do a better job when we understand how to do things right.
That's amazing.
On the architecture side, as president of the American Institute of Architects for Colorado right now, one of the first things I did was something called One Good Idea. And this is applicable to every industry, which is I sent out a president's welcome message and said, I'm collecting one good idea from every member. Please send it into the, and we created a little, it's called Submittable, is one of the programs we used. We created a repository so that people could click on this link and they could type in their one good idea. We're not talking about things like be inclusive or big general comments. We're looking for small, actionable, bite-sized things that we could then collect hundreds of these ideas and build them into a compendium of ideas, sort them by category, edit them down. And then we're going to actually send out an ebook to all of our 2,500 members and say, here are the list of ideas that each of you came up with. We put them all together. Now, you may only find 10 of these that you find useful, but you just found 10 free ideas that will benefit your business.
That's amazing. I think that that type of the one takeaway that I have that I've seen as well in my experience is when you create that kind of culture within, you tend to see it affecting others as well externally in a positive way. And you are able to kind of make change, and you're not doing it to get anything back, but you usually get back tenfold what, you know, whatever it is that you're putting in. Anytime I've done any type of service or something for kind of like the greater good, whether it's community service or whatever it is, it's you go into it with some sacrifice, and you know, maybe it's time, maybe it's finances, whatever it is, but you always get back, and not even intangible, like, you know, sometimes it's direct, you know, somebody sharing something that really, or giving back to something that directly impacts me. But yeah, I think that's a really good point and takeaway when you're in that seat.
It's led to a lot of free marketing, to be honest, because we teach the green building class, or have taught it both for the AIA and for the city of Boulder, for Boulder County. And that information makes its way around the community. And we get these random calls with people saying, hey, we would like to interview you for this magazine to talk about green building. And then we get a call after that with somebody saying, hey, I'd like you to design me a net zero energy home or a new office or a new religious space because I read this article in this magazine that came from our volunteer efforts 3 years earlier.
That's amazing. Well, let's talk then now about what it takes to be a business owner. We've been talking a lot about what you've been doing. And I think in that conversation, we've learned a little bit about who you are. And we ask everybody that comes on the show this, that's what the title of the podcast is what it takes. And I think you have a really unique perspective. So what, in your experience, Scott, what does it take to be a business owner in this day and age?
First is find your passion. It's a little bit of a trite saying, but that's where mine started. Second is build your community. And that, hopefully you've heard from these stories, is really what set us on a path of strong and consistent growth and provided resiliency when the economy turned down. That we didn't have to rely on spending a lot more on marketing because all our efforts to community created this just general field of awareness of who we are and what we did. The third part is having partners within the firm. So this is part of the hard part of what we do. Back in 2008, when we lost 90% of our work, instead of laying people, we didn't lay a single person off during that time. It was a brutal recession. The worst in probably 100 years in our industry. And what I did is I said, everybody's going to take a 10% pay cut, and we pay on an hourly basis. And I said, everybody's going to shift down to 30 hours a week. Actually, at one point, we got down to 25 hours a week, but everybody was still on payroll. And we did that because our philosophy is that we rise together and we sink together. And by everybody cutting out a third of their hours and another 10% of their pay, it meant that we didn't actually have to lay anybody off. And I talked to the staff very openly about that. I said, we have a choice. We can either do the conventional route of, okay, you and you get fired, or all of us take a pay cut and an hour cut. And everybody agreed that they would rather sink or swim together. Conversely, during the last few years, during the pandemic and then the Marshall Fire, which is a huge fire that destroyed 1,000 homes out here, we were, for the last 4 years, it has been hair on fire. We were working 45, 50 hours a week. And instead of one person working 65 hours a week and burning out, we said, everybody, and we do this at our weekly check-in. So here's my one good idea. Every week we have an all-hands Zoom check-in. And what I say is what our benchmark hours are. It's a suggestion, not a requirement, meaning there's always some teams that are burning hotter or going slower than other teams because of where they are in their projects. But what we essentially say is, all right, this week we're going to be at 40 hours a week. This week we're going to be at 44 hours a week. And by everybody ramping up together, it never varies very much. And basically, we hover somewhere. It's kind of like the thermostat in the house. We hover somewhere between 38 hours and 44 hours a week. So for the last 4 hours, the entire firm has been working at an elevated pace rather than some people working at 65 hours while other people work 40 hours. One of the nice things that I found about that is that all for one mentality eliminates a lot of politics. Remarkable thing in this 30-person firm, it has been 20 years since we had a single internal political social struggle. 20 years. Nobody's been yelling at each other in the firm. Nobody's pissed off at each other. And it's in large part because the firm philosophy is we all do it together, up or down. Oh, you're muted.
I don't know how that happened. I was just saying that's wonderful to find your passion, build your community, create your partners within. That's such rich advice and what a wonderful conversation. Big thank you to Scott. Thank you for sharing your story with us. What really stood out to me is kind of the way you combine creativity, obviously coming up with a structure like that, your purpose and community, all of that is into your work. Not just designing buildings, you're shaping how people live, how they connect, how they experience, you know, the environment around them, obviously with their buildings. And you're doing it with sustainability and intention, like really at your core. So if you're listening and you want to learn more about Scott and his work, Scott, where can they find you?
They can find us at www.rodwinarch.com, ARCH.com. And I look forward to chatting with anybody who wants to chime in and say hi.
Yeah. And obviously they've got socials as well. And so we can post some of that stuff on our show notes. But as always, thank you so much for tuning into What It Takes. If you like this episode, very good takeaways today. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs a little bit of information today and inspiration. So thank you so much. And we'll catch you next time.
Thank you.
This podcast is brought to you by Seeker Solution. Are you a business owner feeling overwhelmed? We can help. Head over to seekersolution.com to schedule a call today. Would you or someone you know like to be featured on this podcast? Our applications are now open. Apply today at seekersolution.com and click on the podcast link to get started.